From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. It's Memorial Day weekend, which means here in Los Angeles, the fruit is good. Strawberries and cherries are peaking. Apricots are trickling in. Mulberries are here. You can't walk a mile in this city without spotting a tree full of bright orange ripe loquats. So it feels like the right moment to open Abra Barron's latest book, Pulp. It's the follow-up to her books, Roughage, all about vegetables, and Grist, which was all about grains and beans. Pulp offers us exactly what the subtitle says, a practical guide to cooking with fruit. Hi, Abra.
Hi, thanks so much.
Oh, it's always such a pleasure to have you. We love your books. When I got the book, the first thing I did was I went to the index to look for loquats. And then I realized that your Midwestern background deeply informs this book, like all others. So there's not a citrus chapter, for example, either. I can't think of a more Midwestern fruit than cherries. We get them for such a relatively short season, especially the sour cherries, that it would be lovely to have suggestions on how to exploit the brief season. The way each chapter is organized is you begin with raw, and then savory and sweet options. So what are the raw savory options for cherries?
So the raw savory option is a brined cherry, which I really love because it was, again, kind of this experiment in exploring. We have so many of these things. And yet our season is short too, but we have a lot of volume. And because of the volume in our area, we have a ton of ways to process. So there's a lot of fruit processing factories in Michigan. So that will pit the cherries and individually quick freeze them, which is IQF is the phrase for it. And then you can find them in the grocery store just about any time of the year. So that's sort of our access to it. And when I had all of these cherries around, I was trying to figure out like, what else can I do with it? And I was thinking about both olives and preserved lemons. And how these are, you know, things that benefit from the time, you know, with salt preserving them. And so I tried a couple of different types of brine. This one is actually the least salty of them. And the reason for that is because I wasn't looking to actually preserve them in this brine. And we're not looking, you know, it's not like sauerkraut for cabbage. But what it does is it turns the cherries into this like wonderful, almost sort of reminiscent of an olive, but a different texture than that, but a little bit salty. And I just love the flavor so much. And I've always loved cherry and olive together. And so that was sort of the idea. So the technique is brining cherries in a saltwater brine. And then the recipe is for cherries and olives. So we call it cherries and salty snacks, but it's cherries, olives, lupini beans, which I discovered while writing Grist and really love. And then also some Marcona almonds.
And then your sweet version of raw is chocolate pudding with coffee-soaked black cherries, which just sounds very luscious to me.
It is. And it's that sort of, I'm not a huge chocolate and fruit combo person, but I do like coffee and cherry and chocolate together. And so it's a chocolate pudding. In this case, the dark cherries, you know, again, you identified the difference between a sour cherry or tart cherry and these sweet cherries. So this is a traditional dark black sweet cherry. Traditionally, I think they're called either, you know, Bings or Nelsons are big in our area. And then you take some coffee, cold brew coffee, granulated sugar, a little bit more ground coffee and some brown sugar and a little bit of ginger just to give it a bit of bite and some salt. And then you just combine all of it together. The ground coffee is meant to give it a little bit of texture. Same with the brown sugar. So you're really soaking them in the coffee and sugar mixture and then tossing them in this dry, kind of crunchy mixture of the ground coffee, brown sugar, and ginger.
Wow. That sounds so good. So now we move from raw to baked savory, and it's a cherry baked brie with seedy crackers.
Yes. And I always thought that baked brie, my family would make them, you know, at the holidays generally. And it was, you know, a kind of laborious process of making puff pastry. And then you would roll out the puff pastry and bake cheese in it. And this is sort of an example of one of those times where I didn't have time to make the pastry. I didn't have time to go to the store and buy puff pastry. And so I ended up just cutting the top off of the brie and then loading it up with fruit and baking it. And then the fruit kind of pops and, you know, releases all of its juice, and that bakes and caramelizes and makes this really nice glaze. And you can just, it's like really quick, but it looks beautiful with all of it on top. And then you can finish it with these really crunchy sort of seedy crackers that to scoop it all up. And there is some maple syrup and some bourbon that toss with the cherries ahead of time. And that just adds a little bit of depth of flavor. Sometimes fruit can be perfect, and sometimes it needs a little help along the way. And so this was one where I thought sometimes when people are getting tart cherries, they need a little bit to round them out and without the extra sugar. So there's a little bit of maple syrup and then that bourbon to help cut it too.
But this would be really good with black cherries as well, wouldn't it?
It would. Yeah, I like the sourness against the richness of a brie. And I say in the head note too, this is for not for like your perfect brie de meaux, you know, that is being aged by a cheesemonger. You know, you're going to a grocery store finding, you know, a good but average brie camembert style, because that you're getting that kind of rich fattiness. And so I do like that extra little bit of acidity. If you're not drinking, or if you want it to, if you are using the sweet cherries, I also have a note in it that you can use balsamic vinegar to replace the bourbon. And I do love how vinegar and fruit play together.
And so now we're at grilled or roasted savory, which is buttermilk pork tenderloin and grilled cherry salad. I love the idea of grilling cherries. Tell me you don't just throw them on the grill.
They tend to be a little bit small for that. So I, you know, something like this, I tend to use a frying pan on the grill where they're still going to get a little bit of that smoke just from inherently being on the grill. I've definitely also been camping or in situations like that where I didn't have an extra frying pan. So some tin foil is good as well. You're pretty much using the grill as the heat source, but because it's grilling at the same time as the pork, you're getting a little bit of that smokiness with it.
Sounds so good. I wanted to ask you about another recipe that features another fruit, just because I thought it was so interesting that I'd never thought of doing this before. And that is with blueberries, which of course all of us just eat copious amounts, you know, out of the boxes. But you do a chicken, a spatchcock chicken on top of blueberries.
Yes. So this is, I think the recipe header has kind of a window into the recipe development phase, which is that I feel like, you know, years ago, I read the Zuni Cafe cookbook, like all good cooks do. And there's the, you know, famous chicken with bread. And somehow that evolved in my home to being chicken that's roasted over bread. So, you know, it's pretty classic to roast a chicken over potatoes and carrots and things like that. Well, I really like putting some like cube stale bread in there with something like cherry tomatoes or something kind of acidic. Lemon is a classic one. And then a little bit of wine and stock. And as the chicken roasts, the juices drip into the bread. You got crunchy pieces and soft pieces, and then the crispy skin chicken over the top. And so as I was thinking about this and wanting to do a savory recipe for it, I was thinking, you know, with blueberries, I think that blueberries and cornbread go really well together. And cornbread is always drying out all the time. You know, it's like always a little dry the next day. And so I was thinking, oh, I'll take the ends of the cornbread. And I made it, you know, in the development process with the blueberries. And then it just needed like a little something else. And blueberry and lemon go so well together. And I think anytime you can use the whole lemon, and these are not Meyer lemons, these are just regular grocery store lemons, cut into pretty small pieces so that the rind and the pith will cook together in that extra little bit of liquid. So you get the sweetness and the crunchiness of the cornbread, the pops and kind of tannic flavor of the blueberries, that bright pop of lemon and a little bit of bitterness from its rind and pith, all underneath with different textures underneath this spatchcock chicken that just has golden brown skin, and it's a one-pot dish. It's like perfect for entertaining. It's perfect for like Sunday suppers, things like that.
Another aspect of your book is that every chapter not only features a fruit, but a person who is representative of some type of agricultural issue. I found the interview that you did with Agatha Achindu especially important for people to hear. Is there any way you can kind of briefly summarize her concerns that she expressed in the conversation you had with her?
Yeah, Agatha owns Yummy Spoonfuls, which is a fresh baby food company. And what I was trying to do with these interviews and all of these books have some conversation about some of the systemic issues around food. And in pulp specifically, there are issues of scale that I don't think many average fruit consumers recognize sort of the different scales of growing or the different markets to it. And I wanted to showcase, you know, kind of the issue of a mid-sized scale, both farm and business. And, you know, Agatha's company is an agricultural company. They take food and process it for children. And so she's really reliant on those producers to create things. And she is situated in such that they were a big enough company that she couldn't just go back to the farmer's market the way that she did when she was starting out and buy, you know, the ingredients for it. She had to contract it. Well, so much of the food that we grow in this country is pre-contracted, and even the seconds are contracted. And so it was really a struggle that she didn't have kind of she wasn't the right size for the markets that she had access to. And so these interviews are really meant to kind of highlight and lay bare the structural and systemic hurdles that these producers face. And it's similar, you know, there's an interview with a winery and winemakers and, you know, thinking about, we talk a lot about wine having terroir and being very like tied to the land on which it's grown. But I don't know that there's that same conversation about the people who grow that. Or the fact that, you know, Pete Lang, who is the managing partner at Mabi here in Michigan, which is a 50-year-old sparkling wine company, that when it frosts early, he's in his vineyards at 3 a.m, building small fires in the vineyard to keep the air moving so that the frost won't settle on their grapes. I certainly know that when I'm drinking a glass of sparkling wine, I'm not really thinking about that. But I do think it's important that we think about it at some point.
Well, once again, you've brought us a marvelous, usable book that will also have lots of opportunities to make us think. Thank you, Abra.
Thank you for the time and the attention on this book. It really means a ton, Evan.
That was chef and former farmer Abra Behrens. Her latest book is Pulp, a practical guide to cooking with fruit. We've got a recipe for her chocolate pudding with coffee-soaked black cherries on our website, yum. Who else wants to make that this weekend? You know the link. It's kcrw.com/goodfood. Coming up, when an abolitionist cherry breeder in Oregon wanted to goad his conservative neighbors, he named his prized cherry the Black Republican. That story when we return.